Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. Two Rhode Island school districts are asking the state Supreme Court to intervene in their effort to get more funding from the state. Pawtucket and Woonsocket claim they don't get enough state aid to give their students the same education that students receive in more affluent communities. In a brief filed last week at the state Supreme Court, Attorney Sam Zurier asked the court to consider the future for two children, one from Narragansett and one from Pawtucket, both born in 1990.
Those two kids would now be entering the 12th grade. And the kids from Pawtucket, the odds are better than even that those kids are unable to meet the graduation requirements, whereas the scenario would be vastly different for the kid from Narragansett.
Rhode Island Education Commissioner Deborah Gist has said the state formula for providing aid to school districts takes poverty into account and is one of the fairest in the country. A lower court judge dismissed the district's lawsuit, claiming the formula violates their students' constitutional right to an education. Former Red Sox star Curt Schilling says stress from 38 Studios' business problems was part of the reason he suffered a heart attack in 2011. As Rhode Island Public Radio's Ian Donis reports, Schilling revealed the health problem in an interview with the Boston Sunday Globe.
Schilling tells the Globe he experienced chest pains while watching his wife run in the New York Marathon in November 2011. That was 7 months before 38 Studios went bankrupt, leaving Rhode Island taxpayers on the hook for close to $100 million. Schilling says he was treated after returning to Boston. 38 Studios was lured to Rhode Island in 2010 with a $75 million state-backed loan guarantee. Since the company's failure, Schilling has worked as a commentator for ESPN and coached a girls' softball team from Massachusetts. In Rhode Island, the state is suing in an effort to reduce the amount owed by taxpayers due to 38 Studios. A legislative committee is also continuing to examine the state's losing investment in the company. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
The Rhode Island Bridge and Turnpike Authority is warning that without a toll on the new Saconnet River Bridge, it will have to turn the bridge over to the Department of Transportation. And the Providence Journal reports the DOT doesn't have the funds to maintain that bridge or another bridge. The Turnpike Authority says it would also have to turn over. A legislative commission has been formed to study the problem of how to fund upkeep and maintenance on state bridges. Tiverton Representative John Edwards says even a toll as low as 10 cents remains unpopular with residents in the East Bay.
Most of my constituents have been very clear to me and my colleagues. They've been telling us they don't want a toll, and that's the end to which we are all working. And once the commission starts, that's the end that I'm going to be working towards.
The Bridge and Turnpike Authority is scheduled to begin collecting a 10-cent toll on the Saconnet River Bridge next week as a placeholder for a higher toll that was originally proposed. And in South Boston, residents are reacting to the verdict in the trial of James Whitey Bulger, the man accused of terrorizing their neighborhood for years. Dolores Handy reports that residents' reactions are mixed, even as Bulger's attorneys vow to appeal his conviction.
Tommy Baxter is a lifelong resident of Southie. His reaction to the verdict, not surprised.
Everybody expected a guilty of some sort.
Baxter was one of the few who would comment. A young woman pushing a small child in a stroller kept walking, saying, "You're not going to get anyone to say anything bad," she added.
Around here, we actually like them.
Lifelong Southie resident Michelle Lane's thoughts were with the families of the victims. She grew up knowing of Whitey Bulger.
We just knew that he was somewhere, but you didn't know what he was doing or, you know, what was going on till all this stuff comes to pass.
All agree the South Boston of today is not the same Southie of the days of Bulger's reign.
Dolores Handy reporting from South Boston.
Even on the hottest, most humid day, Patrick McMillan works in the cool comfort of his basement workshop in the India Point neighborhood of Providence. On this day, he's sanding down bicycle chains, which he turns into shiny silver scalloped rings. More often, you'll find McMillan working on custom pieces, usually wedding and engagement rings.
And the custom pieces are the ones that generally take up most of my time. I spend between 2 and 6 weeks working on a piece. So when I do all the other work, it's in between those custom pieces.
McMillan could have worked anywhere after he earned his master's degree in jewelry making in England. He chose Providence because of its compact size, its ready access to jewelry making materials, and its waterfront location. He's actually making a living at the trade without having to hold down another job.
Since the start of 2011, I've been just solely employed at home.
So business is good.
It's staying steady. Yeah, I've managed to grow the shop a little bit in the past 2 years. Better tools, a little bit more, material to keep on hand. But other than that, yeah, it's been staying pretty well.
McMillan's one-man shop is at the bottom rung of a thriving Rhode Island jewelry industry. According to the Rhode Island Economic Development Corporation, there are 1,000 jewelry-related companies in the state, which includes firms that supply materials, make boxes, and service equipment. Combined, they employ 7,000 people. That compares to a height of about 16,000 jewelry workers in the 1950s, according to research conducted by Historic New England. Several miles away from McMillan's basement workshop is Jewelry Concepts of Warwick, which competes with its foreign competitors by churning out tens of thousands of custom orders. On this day, they're making a golden necklace that spells out the name Nancy. Earl Feeney founded the company 29 years ago and employs 65 people.
We're filling orders for internet within 2 business days. you can't do that over there. You know what I mean?
In another area of the Jewelry Concepts plant, women working at brightly lit benches set birthstones into so-called mother's rings.
So a customer might order a ring in sterling silver, and then she'll want to put her 3 genuine birthstones in there for her children. Now they can't do that in China, So you have to find niches that you can that we can service.
Feeney says business has been steady throughout the recession.
I think jewelry is recession-proof, particularly at a popular price point jewelry. A woman will go out and may pass on a vacation or pass on a very expensive outfit, but she'll still spruce herself up with some jewelry, to make that same outfit give it a little zing,
Surely no story about Rhode Island's jewelry industry would be complete without mention of Alex Anani, which in the interest of full disclosure has been a supporter of Rhode Island Public Radio. The company became famous with its hugely popular charmed bangle bracelet. It has grown from $4 million in sales in 2010 to $160 million projected for this year. Giovanni Ferrosi is its CEO.
I think we still are the jewelry capital of America, but, given where we were, which was 75% of the world's costume jewelry, compared to where we are today, which I believe is roughly around 12%, we have a long way to go if we'll ever get back to where we were. But not that I think we need to get all the way back there. I mean, the world is global now, and I'm sure, but if we can double where we are today, it would have a very serious impact positively on the local economy.
Alex Anani is branching out into room fragrances, body creams, and candles. Everything's made in the United States. The company employs about 800 people, 500 of them in Rhode Island. Ferrosi sees strong growth ahead.
I believe Alex Anani will be a very powerful lifestyle brand on the scale of Ralph Lauren and Michael Kors and those that are out there, maybe the latest being Tory Burch a few years back. There was room for a brand, and that's the space that we jumped on. And so we're very rapidly looking at product extensions and filling out different categories and making sure that Alex Anani is what people are really concerned about and looking for as a great quality, high standard brand.
So where is the jewelry industry headed in Rhode Island? I asked Marcel Valois, executive director of the Rhode Island Economic Development Corporation.
I'm not sure. I'm not a jewelry expert. It's not, there's many segments of the Rhode Island economy, and I'm not an expert in any one particular one.
What is the state doing, if anything, to grow this industry?
Rhode Island is not, there's no specific program to help grow the jewelry industry as a separate industry. But there's a major initiative on manufacturing in general. We think that Rhode Island still has a major play in the manufacturing sector.
Even with no real plan from the state supporting the jewelry industry, skilled jewelers and designers have job security in Rhode Island. Delia Machado, a designer at Jewelry Concepts in Warwick, has been hopscotching from job to job for years.
How many different employers would you say you've worked for over the years?
Oh my goodness, about six, seven, yes.
And you never had trouble finding a job?
No, I have not had trouble, no.
Have you always been a jewelry designer?
Yes.
So while Rhode Island's jewelry industry is nowhere near what it used to be, it is still a force to be reckoned with, accounting for 18% of the state's manufacturing base. And the manufacturers interviewed for this report agree it's an industry on the move. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.